This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on this 9th day of October 2010 here in Japan, and I am once again talking to Lieutenant Eric Schein, a graduate of Kings Point and an expert on the history of the U.S. Merchant Marines, whose attempts at whistleblowing have led him to him being tried in a military tribunal by the Coast Guard, acting as a self-described special branch of the military. You can find out more about his case at martiallaw911.com and crossingtherubicon.org. Lieutenant Schein, thank you for joining me once again on the Corbett Report.
Thanks, James. And real quick, important point is I'm not in, nor have I ever served in the Coast Guard. I'm a naval officer, commissioned naval officer from Kings Point, serving on special duty in the Merchant Marine. And the Coast Guard is saying that I'm a civilian and that they're a branch of military.
That's right. And yet it is a military tribunal.
Right.
Exactly. Well,
of me as a civilian.
Which yes, is, exactly.
Those two things are not supposed to be joined together at the hip.
They certainly are not. Well, before we start getting into that, right off the bat, I want to let listeners know that you are also the host of In the Zone on Republic Broadcasting on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, which is 12 midnight on the East Coast of North America. And you have been kind enough to allow me to co-host the program with you, so I would highly encourage listeners to check us out on In the Zone every Saturday night at republicbroadcasting.org. And I'd like to thank you once again for giving me that opportunity.
Well, I think it's a good synergy of knowledge and information. On a lot of this stuff, you're complementing what I'm bringing up with further and maybe a little bit more in-depth information, and sometimes more current. Like last time we talked, I believe I mentioned about Admiral Allen and the revolving door between military personnel, military officers going to work for corporations that they have, you know, directly contracted to or set up contracts with. And you brought up about Admiral Allen just recently, you know, being hired by the RAND Corporation.
That's right. I think there is a good synergy between our information, because I think at a certain point, all roads lead to Rome, and we start to realize that all of these things are interconnected, and it's good to have people to bounce our ideas off of and keep each other up to date with things like that. So we have a lot of different topics that we can cover, but I'm going to leave it open to you about what you would like to start covering this week.
Well, maybe I'll leave it for next time about the trial. I've gotten into that. We've talked, at least 10 times now or 10 hours worth of discussions. We have a couple hours now and another hour tomorrow night on RBN. And we've covered all of this stuff. I was thinking of getting more into my own trial and why it's so disturbing, what's going on. There are, I wanted to spend a couple hours in getting into the whole concept of Greater Germania. And we have touched on that, basically that entire area, which was previously known as Greater Germania, was brought together under Charlemagne in the year 800 AD. And ever since, and you can read books like The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and The Course of History, he touches around this. But the last 1,300 years of European, if not world history, has revolved around the unification or reunification of Germany. And it's not just the German federations, German republics. It's also Liechtenstein, Switzerland, which is the backdoor, banking haven for Germany and that part of Europe. The conflicts between Germany and France, the conflicts between Prussia and the German federations and German republics that led to Prussia being subsumed and becoming part of Germany, and basically, disappearing off the world map. Austria, Bavaria, and more. And when you really start to look deep into this, even in the UK and England, this one issue is mind-boggling in and of itself, that people don't realize that the 54-member nation state known as the United Kingdom, which is England and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, and you probably know all the countries that are part of it better than I, Falkland Islands, Belize, and more, are now part of the European Union. Because when England was brought into and made part of the European Union, as a titular head of the United Kingdom, it brought in those 53 other member nation states of the United Kingdom with it.
Right. Well, technically, the United Kingdom would be Great Britain and Northern Ireland, but you're talking about the Commonwealth.
Yes, because they are. I mean, even Canada falls under and is part of the Commonwealth, with England or Britain being the titular head.
That's right. And in fact, are participating in the Commonwealth Games right now. And for those of you who don't know, yes, it's like the lesser Olympics, but just for the Commonwealth countries. Yes, certainly. We do all have the monarch as our titular head. And as a result, we are really under British rule. However much in denial people of various Commonwealth countries want to deny that fact.
Well, I think it is a great deal of denial, because no matter how much the royal families may have been put down to a degree, or people's beliefs in this through the wars, they have so much knowledge, so much wealth, so much access, so many family members, and many who, even if they did nothing, would try to elevate them back into a position of power so that they could gain grants, title, deeds, favors, benefits from placing these individuals into positions of power and trust as the apparent, if not even symbolic, head of state.
Well, that's right. Well, I just want to pick up on something you mentioned earlier, which I think is important. You talked about Switzerland as being part of a key part of the banking system that this greater Germania is building upon. And I think that's important to stress, because a lot of people tend to think of London as the economic capital of the world, but I think Zurich might have a key part to play in that economic infrastructure. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the banking operations behind this.
Well, but it's not just Zurich, it's also Hamburg and Berlin, and I'm trying to think of Geneva. I mean, if you really start looking into what was set up after the League of Nations and the United Nations, a lot of this, and you really have to wonder, it's like, okay, we've got the United Nations in New York. There's a, you know, an assembly there. But a great deal, you know, even ICANN, the International Computer Address Names and Numbers, or something like that.
Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers.
Yeah, thank you. It was close, but not that close. Not close enough. It's been a while since I've talked about that. But the it's based in, I want to say Sweden.
Actually, I believe it's headquartered in Marina del Rey, California.
No, it's not in the United. They have an office over here, but the actual headquarters is somewhere in Europe.
Well, granted, I am going off of Wikipedia, which is not a bastion of information, but it does say the headquarters are in California.
Now, because, well, unless they've changed this as a, you know, and they do this a lot as a false flag or whatever. But if you go back about 5-8 years ago, the ICANN was actually based out of, and I believe it was Sweden. And then you start to look into other things like Royal Dutch Shell, which, you know, is owned and controlled to a, I would say, a majority stake by the by Queen Beatrix and the royal family. And I brought this up, and I try to educate people about Stephen Gyllenhaal. I don't know if you know, he's a writer, director, producer from Hollywood. Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal are his children.
Right, right.
Jake was in, he's an actor in Brokeback Mountain and a bunch of other stuff. He was just in Prince of Persia as well. And his sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal, was in Batman. I think the most recent one, has a love interest or something for Batman. But their father was ennobled, not knighted like Bush and Reagan and others, but was actually ennobled, made part of the nobility of the Swedish royal family.
I have never heard that before. And what was the connection there?
Well, but if you get into it, you've got a mover and shaker in Hollywood, and his children, who are movers and shakers themselves. You know, starring in a movie like Prince of Persia is no small feat. I mean, that's an enormous gift, grant, no matter how talented the individual may be. He, you know, he can take that and he's set for life. He can build an enormous career off of that, and he's already got a pretty good career going. Those are American jobs. And if you look at what's going on in Hollywood with Canadians, like, they've got, I'm trying to think if it's the, it's not Conan O'Brien or his, it might be his old show. They got the British actor on there with the dark hair. He was on Drew Carey's show, I think, is like the, he ran The Office or something. I can't think of his name. It'll come to me. But he's doing The Tonight Show or something.
I must admit I have absolutely no idea.
I think Leno is The Tonight Show, so yeah. It's like late night,
okay.
One of those.
Right.
But he's Canadian. And, you know, you're Canadian, I understand that, and or British, but when a good paying job like that here in the United States is part of our infrastructure, commerce, trade, transportation, communication, and that is like a pretty important, you know, position. When foreigners have those positions, it takes a good level of control, not only just in the pay and people being able to, you know, build a career out of it, and even if they want to run for political office or start a business or do whatever, that money is going outside the United States, the profit. You know, at some point, you can look to guys like Michael J. Fox, John Candy, you know, basically the whole crew from Kids in the Hall. I don't know if you remember that comedy show.
Certainly do. Classic Canadian comedy.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. But a lot of those individuals, like the one girl who was the sidekick and kind of devil's advocate, I guess, for the guy who was running the network or whatever, the young guy, she's got a huge career here in the United States. She's still in stuff, you know, more recently. A lot of those individuals are for Michael Caine. He's British. And even Michael Caine has had Robin Williams in England, and he got some kind of an award from the Queen. I guess the point in a lot of this is that people aren't thinking things through as our founding fathers did, that a lot of stuff that's going on here in jobs and outsourcing jobs, it's not so simple about Mexicans coming in and taking gardening jobs and being, you know, illegal. One of the things that used to help buoy our country as a republic and our way of life as a, you know, a limited constitutional democratic republic, to where it's of, by, and for the people, and the people are really in control, and no, you know, elite group of families, you know, where we have pipe fitters and welders and carpenters and others running for Congress and running for Senate, and people who have and own small businesses and more, you know, your average Joe from down the street, and not professional politicians from families who have been doing nothing but professional politicking, like the Bush family, Davis Walker family that they're married into, to where, I mean, just look at the Bush family alone. George Herbert Walker Bush was president. George W. Bush was president. Jeb Bush was governor in the state of Florida, where we had the floating chat issue.
That's right. Well, and that plays into the broader spectrum of what we're looking at. I mean, for example, you can take a look at Larry King being replaced by a Brit, and there are just so many examples of that in the media, but it does represent what's going on in society as a whole. And you look at you look in the government and you look at people who have dual Israeli citizenship who are in key positions of power. I mean, there are certainly a lot of people from foreign countries that are in key positions in America.
But you understand, though, too, that Israeli or Jewish issue, and this is one thing I wanted to raise with you and even bring up as the, you know, quote-unquote age-old Jewish question, and a lot of people don't want to go there. I don't even like going there because it's that, you know, white elephant in the middle of the room that people dare not talk about. But the German royal families, no one understand what went on in Germany. They're using it, and this is not just Jewish people who use this to some extent. You know, even the Holocaust issue has become a profit center in and of itself. But the and there was a lot of other people than Jews that died in the Holocaust. There was Christians, Muslims, gays, gypsies, Catholics, Protestants, and more. And, you know, just like in any war. But at some point, this issue is a critical issue, because like in this issue where you have dual citizenship and people are saying that you can't go after Michael Chertoff because he's dual citizen, because he's Jewish, it opens up the floodgates for even people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is Austrian, and he's dual citizen, and he's coming in here, and he's, you know, his father was an SS officer in Germany, and it's clear in my mind that he's connected to German royal families. He would not have married into the Kennedy family if he did not have some level of blue blood, at least in my mind.
Right. That's exactly right, and that's exactly the point. I think it's certainly not a Jewish issue for me. I don't have anything against
right,
the Jewish people, but it is certainly, there are, I think just the general idea of having dual citizens in positions of power, no matter what other country they're also a citizen of, that right away speaks to a conflict of interest.
Right, but my thing is that, or not my thing, I shouldn't say it that way, but my point is that because of the Holocaust, Jewish people can, like Michael Chertoff, can get away with things that other people wouldn't necessarily. And that's, you know, not necessarily true, because in my mind, Schwarzenegger has gotten away with it, and he's Austrian. And, you know, if you look at what happened with Hitler, Hitler was not German. He was Austrian. And if you look, even Adam Weishaupt, who, you know, people bring up about the Illuminati, he was from, I want to say Austria, but it might have been Bavaria. And guys like Kissinger was born in Bavaria, raised in London to an age, and came to the United States, I say, to betray us. But the key thing is that whether you're Jewish, whether you're Christian, whether you're Catholic, whether you're Protestant, whether you're agnostic or even atheistic, or an atheist, or you know, have just completely amoral, not to the point of being immoral, but you just, you know, your morality comes, say, from ethics or business or whatever, that at some point, the bottom line in all of this is that there are good people and bad people from every walk of life, and there are people in all of these walks of life, some that believe in, you know, governance of, by, and for the people, where we are in charge, all the benefits accrue to all of us. And then there is a group and their followers who believe in royalty, who believe in kings and queens, who believe in kingdoms of this earth, and that and they believe that they have been given some kind of divine right, divine obligation, divine, you know, humanity needs them to survive, that they must be in power and control because no one else can do it. And these people are actually, you know, far worse off. A lot of them are, you know, I hate to say inbreds, but they have a lot of genetic anomalies from inbreeding, and they're more corrupt, and that's why they rise to these positions, whether it be king, queen, you know, chancellor, whatever, the three Napoleons and more, Bismarck as well. They arise to this position because they are more corrupt and I don't want to say amoral, but they don't let morality get in their way. They don't let ethics get in their way. They don't even care about what happens to other people or to the planet to a large extent. And that's why they're using even war and warfare, like in Afghanistan, you know, Iraq, the Middle East, and more, to try to work towards one of the things that we've talked about, a worldwide system of governance. Not self-governance, but where there's a difference, there's a glass ceiling to where you have these families that rule on into perpetuity, and if you're not born into them, you will never arise to that level.
That's right. Well, I'm in 110% agreement that this is not about race or religion, it's about an ideology. And I think you're also right to pinpoint the fact that these families that are so interbred are definitely, well, they seem to have this type of, I guess, almost a psychopathy or a sociopathy bred into their family lines, or something that allows them to rise to power without caring about how they do it. And that is something that I think is interesting. Have you read up on ponerology and the different studies of psychopathy?
A little bit, but not, you know, extensively.
Well, I would highly suggest people go and start looking up ponerology and look how that ties into the system, because it is a scientific fact that there is a 2 to 3% of the population that are psychopathic or have psychopathic tendencies that absolutely prohibit them from actually feeling any type of sympathy or emotion that you and I would feel
or
on
empathy,
a daily basis.
Right.
Exactly, which is a key
well,
part
they,
of the
and to,
picture.
Well, and to some extent, they could never see themselves in your position.
That's right. That's right. They have no way of,
you know,
of
like,
feeling empathy or feeling what someone else is feeling, and therefore can do anything they like to that person.
Right, or that you might end up in that same position. Like, you know, in my own position where the Coast Guard has self-declared, self-appointed special branch of military that's not supposed to be a branch of military, is somehow administering civilian affairs, those who are involved in carrying this out and bringing it about don't understand that this can and will be turned against them eventually.
Exactly right. Well, we're dealing with just such a huge topic here that I wonder if there's a way to get a handle on it. And talking about the subject of Greater Germania, is there a way that we can go back and trace some of the history of this idea and where it came from?
Well, it's just like the United States. If you think about it, it's just like what Italy was in its day. It was the gathering point, the empire, the you know, power base for these families, just like Italy and the city-states that arose and the families that helped, you know, build those city-states that eventually became the empire, not just the republic, but the empire, you know, it waffled back and forth between a, you know, a form of empire or kingdom, kings and queens, you know, and guillotines, and some sort of self-governance or, you know, a limited republic or democratic republic. Germany was at that same juncture several times, because even the Italians took and grew and built upon what the Athenians did, what the Greeks did, even going back as far as the Phoenicians, the Sumerians, the Assyrians, and more. We've tried to take what has come before and build upon it and make it better. But there is a group within governance and the corporations, and they're very tightly knit. I mean, if you look at just the board members on the main, you know, largest 200 corporations here in the United States, they're all intermarried, literally. It's all family members who are an extension within 6 degrees of separation by bloodline.
So why and how did this come to concentrate or manifest in Germany and in the Germanic peoples?
Well, I think that, you know, whether you talk about, quote-unquote, the master race, and this is why, even if you bring up the Jewish issue, the original kings and royal families that were in Judea, many of them, just like how, and we've talked about this before, just like Hitler was not German, he was Austrian, Stalin was not Russian, he was Georgian. And what they do, just like Schwarzenegger, and there's a lot of people that would, you know, kill, literally, to get Schwarzenegger in office as president, they bring in people from outside, but there's a very strong thread, and the Habsburgs are the real, you know, prevalent thread throughout history, that want to make Germans, or their bloodline, their German royal bloodline, the top dogs. And they've done this through marriage, through, you know, land grants, through combining one family with another. And many of those royal families that were in charge of Israel or Judea, you know, several thousand years ago, have intermarried with all the other royal families from Germany, from the UK. Even if you look into Asia and more, they've intermarried these bloodlines. And many of the people, like there's, even if you go into Mexico, there's a lot of German blood. You know, you've got Mexican families that are clearly they local, ancestral, with a last name like Holman, which is German, and they do have German bloodline or German roots, because a lot of people left Germany, and even if you go back into the migration here in the United States in the early, you know, let's say 1830s, the German diet had to shut down worldwide, you know, immigration or people fleeing basically Germany, because they were trying to get out and get into something better, where they didn't have such oppressive overlords who, rather than getting out of the way and opening up the roads, opening up the conduits for commerce, peace, you know, or for peaceful commerce, trade, and transportation, they would be more profitable. They would actually have more power if they got out of their own way and the way of the people and let the people drive the economy. I mean, that's the biggest problem right here in the United States right now, is you've got all these billionaires now who have broken up the unions, destroyed individual rights, destroyed civil rights, destroyed due process, whether it be in the United States Merchant Marine, even within our own military, to where if you have pay issues or problems within any branch of the military, good luck in raising those issues, because the UCMJ and Title X has become more of a directed, you know, one-way court system, to where it's for the system itself, the establishment, to go after people rather than for people to have also a redress of grievances from within that system.
Yeah, exactly right. So again, we bump up against ideology. Well, and just to back up...
And you as an individual can't... It's not a meritocracy to where you as an individual cannot protect and defend yourself, because the systems that are there, the institutions that are there to allow you to do that, whether it be public education, so you can educate yourself and make yourself into a better person so that you can better protect yourself. And this goes to, you know, even immigration. I touched on this but didn't really lay it out well. Bringing immigrants into the United States, Mexican or Central American, South American, you know, I wouldn't say Canadian necessarily as much, except for the history of our country and the difference between what Canada is as a constitutional monarchy and what the United States is as a constitutional democratic, you know, limited republic. Immigration used to help the United States, because the immigrants used to know our customs, know our history, even know our language and how to read and write, and know, you know, the law better than many people who had been here for generations, because they had to be educated to come into and be let into the United States. That's no longer the situation.
That's right. Well, elaborate on that. So
rather than being something that would buoy the country and our beliefs and our system, it's actually become a millstone around the neck of the republic, to where we're carrying this burden, and many of these people aren't coming in and aren't faithful to the republic. They're faithful to the almighty dollar.
Exactly, yes. And we see that manifested in so many ways, and I think obviously the most politically visible of those representations right now is the anchor baby phenomenon, as well as also the Mexican illegal immigration phenomenon. So I think
but you have to understand, though, too, that these are tools that the German royal families using the Vandals and the Visigoths for, you know, an immigration issue, and forcing what is called the diaspora or dispersion of their own people out into the world to overrun other countries, to burden these other countries with these people. And not that these people or any people are quote unquote a burden, but it is a greater, I'm trying to think of the proper politically correct terminology so I don't get,
well,
know,
it diverts the resources of the nation towards the sustaining of foreign populations, basically.
Yes, and to where many of the things, like, you know, because if you're an illegal alien or you know, somebody coming in from another country and you don't go through the system, you're out in the shadows. You haven't been trained how to protect and defend yourself, so that you're at greater risk yourself and to the system, and you can be used and manipulated by those who wish to do this to attack the system. So that rather than paying a union wage or a good living wage to individuals, and this is one of the things that, you know, our own federal government has barred under the Bacon-Davis Act and a bunch of other laws, the Service Contract Act, and there's almost innumerable, you know, provisions that prohibit the awesome power of the federal government in its federal contracting might to lower the wages or working conditions in America. But that's exactly what the Bush administration was doing. They actually suspended the Bacon-Davis Act.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to refresh my memory. Which act?
The Bacon-Davis. It basically requires prevailing wage.
Oh, okay.
So that the federal, because this is what they were doing, and this goes into federal contracting scams and racketeering, is rather than paying the prevailing wage, say it's $30 an hour for a journeyman, you know, craftsman. Instead of paying that, they would contract out to a contractor who would contract out to another contractor who would contract out to another contractor to the point where there was like $2 left to be paid per hour to fix roofs that were in the aftermath of Katrina and Rita.
Exactly. So
the roofs never got fixed. Just a bunch of contractors made a bunch of money for doing nothing.
Exactly right. So the theme, the overwhelming theme, is a type of invasion from outside, where it's not a physical army that's invading, but it's people taking resources away from the country. And I think this is an interesting point that you made. It's a systemic issue, and that's the interesting point, because you have a lot on the so-called progressive left who are arguing for the illegal immigrants who are in America right now, who don't seem to know or care.
But they won't argue for Americans.
Exactly. Well, they don't seem to know or care that that only benefits the corporations that are exploiting that basically slave labor, because they are in the shadows.
But it's also a very complex and very sophisticated system, because what you do is once you bring in the immigrants who aren't well-trained, who aren't educated in our ways, who aren't even taught English, how to read and write it, who are vulnerable, who can be manipulated very easily, they're brought into a large herd or collective, say a union or something else, and then their wages are fought for, and they bring them up, whether it's, you know, justice for janitors or some of these other movements and stuff, they bring it up on the lower level. And then what is carried out, and this is what the mafia does, the mob gets into the unions and stuff, is they work the spread, just like these federal contractors in fixing the roofs down in the South and, you know, after the aftermath of Katrina and Rita, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, they use federal contracting. And this is one of the things, this is where I started out in all of this, where in the United States Merchant Marine, as an example, to operate five ships under federal contract for 5 years, say to the Maritime Administration, which is MARAD, or MSC, which is Military Sealift Command, or NFAF, which is Naval Fleet Auxiliary Force. It's a bastard stepchild to the Navy. It's a logistical arm of the Navy. To operate five of these ships under a baseline federal contract is $550 million. There's a bunch of line items that are in that, you know, baseline contract. They're supposed to provide an industrial system of grievance and arbitration. So that if you have an issue of pay, improper pay, and say you didn't get paid overtime, or you didn't get paid penalty time, or you didn't get paid vacation, or, you know, they're taking away things, you didn't get fed. You know, one of the things that I brought up was they were feeding us two meals a day when we were supposed to be getting fed three meals. And a lot of these systems have been set up so that they cannot do this. And the system for checks and balances, which is you, the individual, to where you can complain about it and not be attacked, have been taken out so that what they're doing is working the spread. The baseline contract, you know, and it's cost plus, to where the baseline contract is $550 million for five ships for 5 years. Any cost beyond that, say the main engines break for one vessel, and you've got to go in and do some catastrophic repairs for that ship, and it's an extra couple $1 million. Well, that's added on top, plus an extra percentage, you know, cost plus. It's the cost of doing the work, which is the baseline contract, $550 million, plus 10%, which is the profit margin or spread. And the reason that's kept at a low rate is these enormous companies are making a lot of money off of the gravity or scope of the contracts that are enormous. that few companies could do, Halliburton, KBR, et cetera, and a lot of these shipping companies that have been around for 100 years or more. And what they're doing is, rather than providing all of these line items in the federal contracts, they knock out an item here and an item there. And then what they do is they pay off or corrupt the system that's supposed to carry on the oversight to make sure that these federal contractors are performing on the contracts properly. And they get milestone payments on it. It's really, when you study it a little bit, it's not as maybe complex as it might seem. You know, it is actually fairly straightforward. But what they do by this is they cut out 25 to 50% of the cost of carrying forth that contract and providing on it as contracted to do. They take that money and they put it in their pocket. They're not supposed to do that. They're taking money that is intended for a specific purpose, like say like in the military to build tanks or build ships, and take it and put it in their pocket and use it for whatever they want. You know, to run, you know, even elected representatives for them who will help change the laws and even put judges in place in federal district courts who will help them change the law in court through trials to where the company doesn't have to perform as contracted. We even had people who were caught in Iraq, I think KBR was one of them, who were contracted to provide, it was either 1,400 or 14,000 meals, just as one small example, and just simply didn't serve the meals. But they still put in for them to get paid for them. And what President Bush did when this came up as an issue, and it was on this specific issue, and there's a lot more than this, we're talking billions upon billions of dollars in, you know, graft and corruption. President Bush stepped in and said, war is crazy, pay them.
Absolutely disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, no, because, and what that does, when you steal from the U.S. taxpayers, you don't have to find another, say they steal $1 billion, you don't have to find another $1 billion, you know, off the shelf or tax $1 billion. You have to actually tax more than that because you've got the cost, the overhead of running the government, and whatever that money was intended for, just like on a corporation. And what's going on is this movement to privatize everything under the sun, and this is something that I've brought up, you know, from Philip Bobbitt's book, this change in constitutional order, which is going into a system of feudalism to where you have these families, just like in the Roman Republic. I mean, how do you think the name Miller came about from Rome? They were the people who ran the mills.
That would have been my guess.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, that would have been my guess.
Right. And the Smiths and others, these were large power broker families that as the Republic fell or they took it down, the mills ended up in their hands.
Right. Well, here, so exactly. So let's bring that into the current day. And here's a case example of what you're talking about. In 1991, Dick Cheney was defense secretary, and he contracted KBR to do a study for the U.S. Army on whether it would be viable or not to use more private contractors for the military. And KBR went away and did the study and found that, yes, the U.S. military should use more private contractors.
Dick Cheney then became head of Halliburton.
And then when he was out of Halliburton, he came back into vice president office and used Halliburton as one of his key contractors, which was validated by the KBR study in Iraq.
But it was also a single source, no open bid contracts that were awarded to both Halliburton and KBR.
Exactly.
And a lot of them weren't even regarding the war. They involved Hurricane Katrina and Rita.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. And so what we've seen is just the opening of the floodgates in the last two decades for private contractors. And now that, as we've saw earlier this year, the Washington Post has finally decided to report on the phenomenon of intelligence contractors, private contractors being used in intelligence work now.
Well, 75% of our intel services now, whether they're military or civil, you know, civil service, the CIA is a civil service, and a lot of people wouldn't agree with that. They believe it's some kind of, you know, super military special forces or something. But all of our intel services, up to 75% of the intel gathering and or And this goes to what former President George Herbert Walker Bush was doing. He was sitting on the board of Carlyle as he was getting intel reports as a former president, which, you know, he's passed on these things so that he can help the American people, so that his knowledge of when he was in office, if there's a question, and Clinton or his son or anyone else who might be legitimate, you know, president at the time, he could benefit, you know, from the help from another living president who might have some insider knowledge and can pass it on. Because, you know, there's so much going on in the world, no one person can be the go-to, you know, end-all, be-all in everything. And that some help from former presidents, you know, either side of the aisle, because the first thing on their mind should be all the American people, not just the rich. But George Herbert Walker Bush was getting intel reports from all the different agencies. And now, rather than, and people don't realize what's going on in our intel system, is it's all been combined so that now, rather than getting intel reports from just CIA or, you know, someone, you know, maybe even the FBI or others, now you're getting them from across the board, and it's so much information the government doesn't know what to make of it, but the private firms sure as hell do.
The private firms that are run by the very same families that are in charge of the so-called government. And let's go back to that, what you mentioned earlier. You said the CIA is a civil service, and that's an interesting point, because obviously the CIA
is
stemmed...
But James, it's also a passive information and intelligence gathering service that the military, president, executive branch, Congress are supposed to use to pass laws, to declare war, to defend the country. And it's not really it wasn't intended to be active extra constitutional, you know, almost branch of military, to where it's carrying on operations inside and outside the United States.
Right. Well, that wasn't the overt purpose for which it was created, but that was certainly the intention with Dulles and the others that were behind it. And of course,
yeah,
it stemmed
and
Dulles from
is,
yeah, yeah, part of the whole network. Absolutely.
Well, you've heard of Russ Baker's new book, The Family of Secrets, I think it is.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't had a chance to read it.
No, either have I, but I heard it's pretty, you know, mind-opening as to how deep the rabbit hole goes, you know, and for how long, and just who's, like, you know, the Bath family. People don't realize that a lot of these families are right, like Sherwin-Williams, it's a paint company, right? Those are two family names. It's not some dude named Sherwin who has a last name Williams. It's Sherwin family and Williams family who have come together to dominate the paint industry.
Exactly. Well, let's get into that a little bit, because what we are seeing is this type of monopolization of each individual industry by these interconnected families. And what do you make of that phenomenon, and where do you think this phenomenon is headed?
Well, now people are starting to, and, you know, I was probably a little bit ahead of the curve, and that's, I guess, part of my problem in life. You know, I stood up and tried to confront this. I didn't realize how corrupt our government was. I didn't realize how, I mean, just the number of people. I've had a family member who's an attorney comment that he has never seen one person surrounded by so many attorneys in his life. There's over 75, easily 100 or more attorneys, probably at least 15 or 20, minimally, just from the Coast Guard and Department of Homeland Security, who were involved directly in my life.
That's incredible.
Well, and it makes you wonder. It's like, so wait, this guy, they're trying to prove that he's crazy. But when you think about what's going on, it's a special branch of military that I'm not in, never served in, that's saying that I'm a civilian, that's saying that they can not only administer civilian affairs, but issue civilian licenses and carry on trials regarding those civilian licenses, regardless of where any incident might occur or what the incident might be about, whether it's in the United States or abroad. They're saying that they have floating jurisdiction all around the world, and not floating because it's on the water and afloat, but because they can move it wherever they want. And then when you start looking at this, that it's really, you know, someone or a group of people are trying to take the Coast Guard in this gray zone and turn it from a civil service into a special branch of military, not in the Department of Defense, but in Homeland Security, that can carry on and administer civilian affairs. So who's crazy, me or the people who are, you know, carrying on this aberration, this perversion of our system, to the point where they don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand the gravity of what they're doing, and it will consume them as well as everyone else around them. It's not just the people that they target with it or use, because eventually, just like in Germany, it will consume everyone except for those very few select families and their family members. We've talked about this before, I think, in Dresden, you know, when the United States carpet bombed Dresden, there was, we might not have talked about this, but the Paul Warburg, and you know who he is and what he's all connected to and tied to, Warburg's building or buildings in Dresden, and this may be a rumor, but this shows the kind of power that he either had or supposedly had by myth, to where his buildings were one of the few things that was still standing in Dresden.
Coincidentally, I'm sure. No, I believe we did touch on that before, but it is a point that needs to be stressed, because it's definitely not coincidental.
Right. And you have these, if people would, like in my own situation, lift a finger to help out, and I commend you and I thank you for, you know, you've thanked me for bringing you on RBN and trying to spread what you're doing, but I you know, send the thanks and the gratitude back at you a thousandfold for what you've done for me in bringing it out, because it does help to parse this out, especially in a conversation like this back and forth where you understand a great deal. And you're, you know, we're not really, you're Canadian, I'm not your enemy, and I'm American, I'm not your enemy. We're both Americans, you know, and I don't mean that America's taken over Canada, but we both live on North American continent. And that at some point
live there anyway.
Right, true, sorry. And I mean, you still have your, you're still a national of Canada, right?
Yes, I am.
Right. But we have more in common, and we should be working together. And this is where it gets kind of dicey, because either way they play this, they've laid out the chess pieces and the game board in such a manner that even if it is carried out through a populist movement and the people finally say enough, Canada breaks off of, you know, the monarchy and Britain and the UK and the European Union and just says, look, we're, you know, had enough. We don't want you even in our country. You're not invited. And the United States finally realizes that we've been, you know, tricked for some time now, probably since at least our Civil War, that the you know, Brits, UK, and German royal families, the Windsors as one and the Habsburgs as another, have a stranglehold on our country and have been placing their, you know, family members and others who are beholding to their families or their family, you know, lineage or family lines, in places of power and trust, not just within the corporations, like, you know, Rothschild said back in the day in the 1700s, I care not who makes the laws for a country so long as I control the economy. Because to some extent, if you take over the economy, it doesn't matter who writes the laws because you can't enforce them because you don't have any money to do it. And that's where they have us. They've really, this has been something that since our Declaration of Independence, since our Revolutionary War here in the United States, the British monarchs and their German counterparts in Germany have worked, and World War I was part of this, World War II was part of this, even the Cold War was all part of this, to bring us all, I mean, Bush is German, his father is German, and they've set up this dynastic family line, you know, where you've got Jeb Bush. And, you know, I mean, where did George Herbert Walker and George W. Bush, let alone Jeb Bush, come from? but Prescott and Samuel Bush, who were also, I think Prescott was a senator, U.S. senator.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And absolutely, people can look at that family line and the ways it's connected to, well, so many events over the last half century, at least, including JFK. But that's a whole different conversation,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, that's in Russ Baker's book. Mm-hmm. Well, that's in Russ Baker's book, Family of Secrets, about, you know, the connections of George Herbert Walker Bush in being in Texas on the day that Kennedy was assassinated.
That's right. And then called to have a personal meeting with Hoover the next day to debrief him about what the CIA knew about the JFK assassination, even though that George Bush supposedly was never in the CIA. Ha ha ha.
And can't recall where he was on the day that Kennedy was.
Yeah, it slips my mind. What was I doing on 9/11 again? Oh, I can't really
remember. When Ronald Reagan got shot, I was pulling into a Shell gas station in San Diego with a friend in his truck, and we were putting some gas in it, and we heard it on the radio, and we were in like high school, and we were like, oh my God.
That's right. And what was the connection there? Hinckley was going to be meeting with George Bush's son.
Well, but you know, the Hinckley family is a power broker family that has known the Reagans for a very long time.
Absolutely. Well, exactly. I mean, it is another round of connection.
But the Hinckley name, you know what they make?
I have no idea.
Boats. Small pleasure craft.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and that's where, if you start looking like into this, whether it's, you know, if your family has so much money that you're a trust fund kid and that you don't have to work, you don't have to take a job, you can, you know, keep a clean record, and if you can't keep your nose clean, they'll keep it clean for you by paying people off and doing what they have to do, just like with George W. Bush. And they will build, you know, like his ownership in the, I don't know, was it the baseball team? Was it the Rangers or whatever?
Right, yeah, I believe so.
Right, but then you look at how all of that, it wasn't really so much that he was a good businessman or had anything, you know, he was helped in putting these positions of power and trust to make it look like. But then when he becomes president, he does almost like, not Nero, but, you know, many of the emperors in Rome, and goes to the baseline of the American people and builds a Colosseum in Washington, D.C. And I don't mean a, you know, per se a literal Colosseum, but he fought. And why would the president fight for a baseball team in D.C.?
Because he's a baseball fan? No, I don't.
Yeah, right. Or maybe because they want to have a distraction, just like in Rome, to where as Rome is burning, they're giving them loaves of bread and letting them, you know, watch as the lions are feasting on their friends.
Well, there's no doubt there is a connection between the sports-obsessed culture in America and the downfall of American politics, and it is an interesting connection. But I'd like to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, because you placed a growing sense of this this economic beast that's taken over so much and rotted out the core of America at the Civil War,
one thing I want to mention, though, too, that this is not an accident. This is not something that is just happening. It is something that is being orchestrated and planned over time.
A point that I stress time and time and time again in my work, it's definitely not just a haphazard series of events. There has been a coordinated agenda, and it has unfortunately worked so well, and we have been in the dark about it for so long. But I'd like to go back and ask you, your opinion on people like, say, Lincoln, who was, of course, issuing his own greenbacks when he was assassinated. What do you think of people like him in the structure?
That was the same thing for Kennedy, though, too.
Supposedly, but I have read, because you're referring to Executive Order 110101, I can't remember, 110111,
right,
whatever
right.
It was. Yes, but I've read alternate interpretations of that was in fact actually a way to phase out the greenback and bring in more Federal Reserve money. I've read different interpretations of it.
But he was trying to maintain the backing of the dollar, so it wasn't just a free-floating fiat currency, to where I think the one thing that he was working on was the silver certificate.
That's right. But the silver certificate was part of
Yes, I agree. There could be, and looking at his father. But I really believe that John F. Kennedy had broken from the ties Joe Kennedy had to the English royal family and crown.
I agree completely. He seemed to be someone who was fundamentally shaken to the core by Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and seeing the internal workings of the military structure that had taken over the U.S. government and attempted to usurp his power, and that's why he wanted to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter them to the winds. And that's why he turned down Lemitzer when he came with Operation Northwoods and said, hey, let's blow up aircraft and kill Americans and blame it on Cuba so we can launch an invasion. And I think he was truly shaken up by that.
But you know who did break up the CIA and outsourced, basically sent 1,000 CIA personnel, officers, and more onto the streets, and you know who picked them up? Carter kicked them out, went after the CIA, got rid of over 1,000 operatives, and guess where they went to work? George Herbert Walker Bush in private employment.
That's interesting. Tell me more about that.
Well, that's why think of what else has the name of Carter on it. Like, there's a carburetor named Carter. And when you really start looking into these names, almost all of them, like, even Ford, Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, and we've talked about this, it's not his real name. It's Leslie Lynch King. And King is one of these power broker families that I have run into in my own affairs continuously. There was even a woman named, I think it was Natalie King. I think I talked to you about this before. She was on the GAO, Government Accounting Office, who was doing an inquiry into the Coast Guard's, administrative law system. They call it administrative law system, but it's really admiralty courts or military tribunals. And they told me, and it wasn't just King, there were other names that popped up at me. And, not only was this woman's last name King, Gerald Ford's real name is Leslie Lynch King. Because one of the superintendents of my academy, when I just got in there, his last name was King. And then they hired a Nick King down in San Diego on my case, who was a subcontractor that was hired by the Protection Indemnity Insurance Club's Defense Council. I basically had, in these Coast Guard proceedings, I had the defendants from federal district court that I had sued representing me in Homeland Security proceedings. So it's like, you going after somebody having a complaint against them, they get a branch of military to file a complaint against you, and then all of a sudden they're your counsel. So it's just, it's not just a change in venue and change in jurisdiction. It's also a change from me as a plaintiff suing on behalf of the United States and the American people to recover money under federal contracting violations or QUETAM or QUETAM laws. And this is what you brought up about Lincoln. Lincoln was the one who first brought the QUETAM laws, and what QUETAM means, it's QUI and then TAM. It means he who sues for himself sues for the king. And this is under a monarchy or a constitutional monarchy. Basically saying that you sue for yourself, you're not only protecting yourself, but you're protecting the country, the nation, the people, and those who are in charge, the government. Under our system, it's a little bit different, to where he who sues for himself sues for the people, all of us. And it gets into where if you're going after Halliburton or KBR, you have an independent right, almost as an independent attorney general, to sue these individuals and bring them in court, hold them accountable, and recover the money. And under QUETAM, it's anywhere from 10 to 30% of the recovery, or what you've saved the federal government. But Lincoln brought QUETAM over from England, from English common law, to the United States during the Civil War for the first time to go after war profiteers, which included his own wife. He didn't go after and sue his wife, but she was actually involved in a bunch of the corruptions, as was the Secretary of State, who he ended up sending over to the, to Russia or whatever, to be a statesman over there and out of the country, so he couldn't pull any more, crap, for want of a better word. But Lincoln was distraught by the fact that his own wife was caught up in the corruptions. And you had guys like J.P. Morgan, who came to the United States from England, who not only incited the Civil War, he funded both sides of the Civil War, he profited from both sides of the Civil War, he used the Civil War to take down American financial houses, like even what J.P. Morgan is doing now with Bear Stearns and more, and it's done in the last couple of years, and converted them back to crown possessions, owned and controlled by the royal family and crown families of England, United Kingdom, if not Germany as well, Europe. And his he was backed by his father, who was an English banker, who was backed by the crown. And J.P. Morgan not only was deeply involved in creating the Civil War, funding and profiting from the Civil War, and doing so for foreign royal powers to help take down the United States as a young republic, but he also helped start General Electric, which owns and controls NBC. And so you see the problems like guys like David Letterman have had with the suits at NBC, and why The Tonight Show with Letterman ended up leaving NBC because of his problems with the GE suits, who were basically, you know, British overlords, for want of a better word, Jack Welch included with GE, and moved to CBS. You know, and he was very outspoken about, Letterman was, about, the problems with the suits at GE. And I've worked for GE. I was a project manager, lead field engineer on Navy vessels for GE in the shipyard down in Ingalls in Pascagoula, Mississippi, doing installation on board LHD, LHAs, DDGs, and other naval combatant vessels, for General Electric. So I'm not talking out of my, derriere on this. It's from not only personal experience, but being forced to try to investigate and figure out the people who have come after me and why they've come after me. And there's a very clear English, royal, Anglo-Saxon connection here of individuals and families who wish to overturn our system of self-governance, to shut down our systems of due process, our systems of, a meritocracy to where you arise from your own efforts, and basically turn it over to, it's not what you know, it's who you know, or who you're related to.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's right. So I guess Letterman moved from GE NBC to Westinghouse CBS?
Yeah, and there's not much of a difference there, right. Maybe a little bit in flavor, but, it's Westinghouse and CBS is basically the same thing like Disney and ABC.
Yes, it is. Well, it is all one big media corporate conglomerate, and unfortunately, as many people know, I think it was over 90% of media in the United States is owned by the same six corporations. So,
but this is the biggest problem that we are facing in the world today, because with the internet, with the technology, with everything else that's out there, rather than being used as a growth, an engine of growth for the world, to the point where we should, literally, even with the wars and everything that are going on now, I say that if, we weren't involved in all these, ridiculous wars that have, they're not really about defense. They're not about the American people or helping the Afghanis or the Iraqis or anyone else. It's about using the United States as a tool for the royal European families to impoverish and take down any system of self-governance that may pop its head up around the world, and at the very same time use these wars of foreign aggression, just like what was carried on in Germany, to suppress the American people themselves as well.
That's exactly right. That's unfortunately very much the case.
Well, and I don't see, Jerry Brown out here in California may sound a little bit better, but Brown is another one of these family, Brown was living off of a trust fund from his family, but people like Campbell Brown, if you start researching some of these names and the connections, they've got their hands into everything. And what the reason they do this, they're fascists. There's no other term that, other than maybe collectivist or whatever, or corporatist. they use the government and embed themselves within the government not to help out the general welfare or the people in general, and to do, and to act as a public servant in the mind, in the mindset of Christ, which I mean, and I don't say that being, you know, religious or anything, but anyone who knows the story of Christ, whether you believe him to be God incarnate or not, whether you believe that he was just a prophet or not, whether you believe he was a historical figure or not, the story, the fable, the history of that tale goes to someone who is liberal, progressive. And I'll give you a perfect example. The Social Security Administration employs about 15,000 Social Security Administrative Law Judges. It's either 1,500 or 15,000. I think it's 15,000. But they have tens of thousands of personnel within the Social Security Administration, and not just direct employees, but all sorts of now individuals who are contracted out from the agency. Rather than doing it with civil servants where there's no profit margin involved, they're bleeding off of the trust fund. It is easier and cheaper and better for the economy, better for the people, to simply pay out the benefits, not to have this bureaucracy from underneath the executive branch, which is unconstitutional, because having these administrative ministries or agencies like in the UK, they're supplanting and even to a large extent shutting down our independent Article III judicial system that is not supposed to be part of and embedded within the executive branch. But that is exactly what's happened. In my own situation, there's case law, and I've cited this, Reed versus Covert from 1957. A woman, Mrs. Covert, was the wife of a service member, of American service members serving in England, the United Kingdom at the time. He was murdered by someone. She was the next closest thing. The military blamed her, prosecuted her within a military tribunal overseas as she was accompanying military personnel. She was found guilty, of course, and if you these military tribunals have one thing and one thing only. They find somebody, point at them, and find them guilty. That's it. They're complete kangaroo courts. Even our own military should not be tried by the military itself. It's a conflict of interest. If the military is going to go after them, they should have to do it in federal district courts. There's no reason, because our federal district courts are set up in such a manner that they can protect issues of national security. They can do stuff in camera, they can record it, they can black it out, they can do all sorts of things. And federal judges should be well vetted to where they can see this stuff, and it's not worried that they're going to somehow release it or do something that is not in the interest of national security. But Mrs. Covert was actually driven mad by the military from the attacks upon her and putting her, you know, through a military tribunal and finding her guilty. This went all the way up to the Supreme Court here in the United States, and it was upheld in 1956 in a ruling by, and this is under the Eisenhower administration, to where they ruled that military tribunals of American civilians overseas accompanying, you know, military personnel is fine and dandy. Well, her father got involved, and maybe it was a little bit late to have much of an influence on the 56 ruling, or the ruling in 1956. He got involved, got the Solicitor General of the United States involved, who by defect and default got the Attorney General involved, because the Attorney General works for the Solicitor General whenever he, you know, steps forward to protect the Constitution. They realized that this ruling could not stand. The following year, they petitioned for a rehearing. In 1957, the United States Supreme Court overturned itself, one of the few, if not only times it has ever done this, where the same seating of the same Supreme Court members overturned themselves upon rehearing. They ruled, and Hugo Black was the individual who wrote the opinion for the Supreme Court, brilliant opinion. He went all the way back, and you'll appreciate this, he went all the way back to 1215 AD to the Magna Carta in English common law to lay out why, and he could have gone further back, he could have gone back to the Rubicon and you know, Caesar in Italy, of why we keep a bright line of separation between what is military and what is civilian, and what is civilian and what is military. And they said that these military tribunals were unconstitutional. And this ruling, though, is so much more important because it also says that any, this went into what they call SOFAs, Status of Forces Agreement. It's what the United States signs with, like, England, a foreign country, so that any American military personnel that are in their country are treated in this manner as per the Status of Forces Agreement. And we've got plenty of forces in England and all through Europe, if not all over the world, for whatever reason. But the Supreme Court, you know, laid out that these international agreements, like the Status of Forces Agreement, are creatures of the U.S. Constitution and would not exist but for the U.S. Constitution. Therefore, they must be in compliance with the U.S. Constitution, which included the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, or the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights is such a, it basically tried to take what the Magna Carta did for the nobility in England and in Europe and take it down into the hands of the people, the general people. And that's what our Bill of Rights tried to do. And that's why these royal families don't like the Bill of Rights. They've tried to pass the Military Commissions Act, the H.R. 1955, S.B. 1959, a trailer or rider to the Defense Authorization Bill that made it okay, and this goes directly to my own issues, that made it okay for the military to try American civilians within military tribunals. And this whole thing with Gitmo and the detainees down there is directly related at that issue as well. And you've got these, I can't call them anything other than British royal agents operating from within our government, within our corporations, here in the United States, who are targeting sections of our Constitution intentionally so that they can then seize control of, and I believe they already have to a large extent, and use our own system of self-governance against us to impress themselves and impose themselves upon us indefinitely.
Exactly, by overturning all of the checks and balances that were carefully set up in the Constitution and framed by the Founding Fathers.
Yes, they've studied our system of self-governance, and they've used it, like Lieutenant Commander Walter Brzezinski, he's a judge sitting on my own case right now, he actually stepped in. Parlin McKenna was the first quote-unquote judge. He's not a judge. He's not a member of the Article III judiciary. He is a member of the executive branch. He's a police officer. So there are these police officers who are actually members of a branch of military now, military police officers, are carrying on trials here in the United States. And I've been screaming about this, blowing the whistle, complaining, trying to get help, trying to get people to understand how serious this is since at least 2003, 2004.
Which raises the question of why do you think it's so difficult to get the message out about why this is so important and goes to such a fundamental part of the structure of the system itself?
Because a lot of people don't care. They are trying to scrape and survive. They got hit by Katrina. They got hit by Rita. They got hit by the latest blast in the economy. They got hit by the bailouts and devaluation of the dollar. You name it. They're carrying on economic warfare. Rather than dropping bombs, they are dropping fiscal acts. And I mean fiscal as in F-I-S-C-A-L, to where it's monetary or fiscal or economic acts against the American people to soften them up, and not just to soften them up to move in and take over, but then to really nail to hit the nail on the head on the coffin and keep that coffin lid down upon the American people, not the people of the world, is to drive us into another world war to where they can more finally say, this is it. We have a one world system of governance. You're not part of it. They even talk about, in Philip Bobbitt's book, about distancing the people, the American people, as far away from its government. That means it's no longer Helpline for the People. That means somebody else is the government, and you will do whatever those other people tell you to do. Oops, sorry. I was trying to pull out my Philip Bobbitt's book and read from this section again real quick, this one paragraph. Because it's so telling. Just in this one piece, when I read this, I've cracked my book, broken the back of it at this page, because it blows. It's right here. They're telling you exactly what they are up to. And this is from his book, The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and the Course of History, Philip Bobbitt. This is part three, The Historic Consequences of the Long War. And you got to understand, they define the Long War as World War I that started because the Habsburgs, Duke Ferdinand and his wife Sophie, were assassinated, and two other members in, and this relates back to the whole issue of, you know, Germany, and the royal family, the Habsburgs. Two other members of the House of Habsburg who were living in Italy were assassinated by the Black Hand because the Italians were sick and tired of the German royal families who were living in and carrying on, you know, oppression within Italy of the families that had been there a lot longer than the German families that had moved in and bought up land and property and took over things. Thesis, the market state is superseding the nation state as a consequence of the end of the Long War. The end of the Long War was, of course, when the wall fell in 1990 in Berlin and Germany was reunited or set on the road to reunification. The end of the Long War has been quickly followed by the emergence of a new constitutional order. This new form is the market state, whereas the nation state, with its mass free public education, universal franchise, and Social Security policies, that's why they're targeting Social Security. They want it. They want that treasure chest. And Social Security policies promised to guarantee the welfare of the nation. The market state promises instead to maximize the opportunity of the people, and thus tends to privatize many state activities and to make voting and representative government less influential and more responsive to the market. The United States, a principal innovator in the development of the market state, must fashion its strategic policies with this fundamental constitutional change in mind. And that's why I bring up about, where was the cell that planned 9/11, supposedly? It was in Hamburg, in Germany. Why did we attack Iraq rather than Saudi Arabia? That 15 of the 19 terrorists came out of Saudi Arabia. George Herbert Walker Bush, who's related to Queen Elizabeth, was holding hands with the royal family from Saudi Arabia, Prince Fahd, or Saud, two families, I guess. And we attacked Iraq instead, which was a republic, a system of self-governance, just like we attacked Iran under Mossadegh in 1953 and put in the Shah.
Well, that's right. Okay, so let's break down that what you've just gone over, because it is so important and goes so much to the heart of the system that we see being set up right now. And we can trace this in so many different ways, both overt and covert. Overtly, obviously, in the formation of the World Trade Organization and other multilateral associations that do not have any supposedly have jurisdiction in multiple nations, yet
no.
Exactly. There's absolutely no process for any type of democratic input or any input from the people.
You can't even get on or become part of the IMF or the Council on Foreign Relations or World Trade Organization or World Bank unless you're related to one of these families and they place you there.
Exactly. And it's very important to know that this is the result. This is the conscious result of a very deliberate series of manipulations that have taken place behind closed doors and behind sealed rooms for decades, if not centuries. And we see that expressed. There was the former U.S. Undersecretary of State George Ball, who was one of the first North American members of the Bilderberg Group, who expressed at a 1968 Bilderberg Group meeting in Mont-Tremblant, he said that he wanted that the ultimate aim was to develop, quote, a world company to take over the archaic political structure of nation states. And that's exactly what is being aimed at, is a world company, and to structure a new type of world government in terms of...
Well, what do you think a world company is, though? It is basically like an ant colony, like a beehive.
Agreed.
You are a worker bee, you are born a worker bee, you will always be a worker bee, and it doesn't matter how brilliant you are, how self-sufficient you are, how independent you are, what you might bring to the table, you will always be this worker bee and classified as that. And if it drives you crazy and you commit suicide, well, fine, we have more worker bees. And that's why you have a queen of a colony, whether it be a beehive or an ant colony. And that's what these guys are trying to create. This market state is a corporate state, and it is fashioned upon a colony. You know, that's why they even called them colonies back in the of a hive mentality, to where you have a king and a queen.
That's exactly right. It's all trying to bring everything back to an autocratic system where everything is delivered from on high.
Because it's so lucrative, not to the people, not to 99% of the people, and I'd even include them in there, because they would have more power. They would be, we would not even give them much thought if they would get out of the people's way. We would be off this planet right now if we were not in Iraq, if we were not in Afghanistan. You can already see, you know, it's almost like the movie, one of the Star Trek movies where they went back in time and it was like the advent of when they were first coming up with a warp drive.
Yes, right. Remember. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, you just saw where we had space shots by private corporations. I'm trying to think of the name. It was, it wasn't Breedlove, or I think the Brit, Branson, was involved. He might have been back in part of it, but I can't think of the name of the company. But they went up, they got, you know, weightless, and they've shot up a couple, vehicles, and they've proven the concept. And even now, companies like, and I'm not an advocate of this company because I realize who's behind it, like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and others. There's a company now, it's Sea Launch. It's up in Long Beach, and they're shooting up, and they're using, you know, arbitrage, human arbitrage, of using foreign labor, foreign assets, and working to spread the difference between the American dollar and American working conditions and more, to make a bunch of money in launching low Earth satellites with these launch and control platforms. They're hiring Filipinos as part of the crew and keeping them behind fenced gates up in Long Beach, to where they're almost like kept prisoners. And then they allow the scientists, who many are foreign nationals from Europe, Czechoslovakia, former Iron Curtain countries and more, are former enemies, and many of these people have not been properly vetted, and they're running, you know, around unescorted in Los Angeles and throughout the United States.
That's right, and for people who don't understand the significance of that, they might find the historical context in something like Operation Paperclip, with the Von Brauns and the people of those ilk brought over to, without proper vetting, again, and you, often with full knowledge that these people participated in war crimes in Nazi Germany, but we wanted them on our side.
But you also bring up, and the vetting, which is an important issue, the Naval Academy at Annapolis and the Army Academy at West Point, there's four basically federal military service academies. Kings Point is one of them, United States Merchant Marine Academy that I went to. I come out as a naval officer with a special commission serving on special duty in the United States Merchant Marine. I'm embedded there for issues of civil defense and national security, so that I'm the eyes and ears not only for the Navy but also for Congress. And if I see things like what I've seen, I can report upon them and tell them what's going on so that they can take corrective actions. But many members in Congress are actually involved in what is going on. They want there to be no more United States, because if there is no more United States, they will profit from this enormously. But I'm trying to remember, I was thinking of, what did you just mention again? The
Operation Paperclip? And Wernher von Braun and all the Nazis brought over to work for the...
Oh, that was Coast Guard Academy, right? There's Annapolis, there's West Point, there's the Air Force Academy, there's Kings Point. The Coast Guard Academy is not a military federal service academy. It's a federal service academy, but not a military one. They've converted it into one, but the important point is they call their students cadets. Annapolis calls them midshipmen because they're naval personnel. Kings Point calls them midshipmen. Sometimes cadet is used or cadet midshipmen interchangeably, but they're really midshipmen. The Air Force Academy calls them cadets because they're part of the military. Coast Guard is obviously not part of the military. It's, you know, it's a waterborne agency, so civil service. They call them cadets because it's a police academy. It's a federal police academy, a federal maritime police academy. But what's important, and this goes to the vetting issue, Coast Guard Academy students are not vetted. They're not required to get a congressional appointment or a senatorial appointment by a Congress member or a senator. I had to get a congressional appointment to get into Kings Point. So the Coast Guard doesn't have this vetting process. I had to go through before a board of 7-member panel I went before a couple of different Congress members because Kings Point allows you to get your nomination and appointment from someone who's not in your district. All the other academies like West Point and Annapolis require you to get your nomination from the congressman or senator for your district, the senator for your state. But the Coast Guard does not also get a background check from the defense, meaning Defense Department, Defense Investigative Services. So there's the Coast Guard personnel, which is now, it's grown from 42,000 members in the Coast Guard to 65,000 members overnight, and it's still growing, and has just been given an $11 billion budget and is building the JAG Corps and more. It's this special branch of military now in Homeland Security, not in the Department of Defense, and it doesn't have the same vetting process as West Point or Annapolis or Kings Point or the Air Force Academy. So it's basically anybody can get in there as long as you have the money or you've been educated or sponsored by somebody and have proper test scores, you can get in there and there's no real background check. It's a huge hole in our national security infrastructure because then people are going in the Coast Guard and then transferring into other services.
Right, so it's like they're opening up a back door for people to get in.
Yes, and they're using, because if you look at the first Coast Guard Commandant who was appointed by Woodrow Wilson in 1915, his name is Admiral Bertholf. And Bertholf, interestingly enough, and you really have to look at the background of these people. I mean, if they had this, it's like with Porter Goss. I don't know if you remember him. He was the head of the CIA appointed by George W. Bush. And he said to Congress, I couldn't even get a job at the CIA. And he gets, appointed to be head of it. He was a former congressman. He could not get hired by the CIA himself. And then he's appointed to be in charge of it somehow.
Or so they say, anyway. They said that about George Bush, too, but we know that was a lie.
Right. But, and I'm trying to think of where I was headed there on the...
So it's difficult. It's difficult to get into these agencies, but it's easy to get into the Coast Guard.
Well, but the thing is that they. I was talking about Admiral Bertholf. Bertholf, and you really have to look at the background of these people. Bertholf was court-martialed out of the Naval Academy.
Court-martialed out of the Academy.
So serious, out of the Naval Academy, wow. Annapolis. And he ends up in the Revenue Cutter Marine under the Treasury Department, which Hamilton was, of course, involved in and had set up and tried to play a bunch of games with, back when. But Bertholf jumped over 22 other officers of higher rank, pay, and grade to become the first Coast Guard Commandant in the middle of World War I, which, of course, involved England, United Kingdom, and Germany. Bertholf was not only, court-martialed out of the Naval Academy, guess what else? He was also knighted by the King of England.
Surprise, surprise.
Right, and so you start to look at all this and you start to realize that there's a common thread, that those people who are corrupt or corrupted or corrupting or easily corruptible or will corrupt other people or push, you know, keep other people in their place are being promoted, and that the concept of the Peter Principle is being used to intentionally promote people who will attack and injure, basically sociopaths, to promote these people to positions of power and trust so they reach the highest level of their own incompetency in our lifetime to tear down the system from within.
That's right. So let me ask a somewhat broad philosophical question that I think gets to the heart of what we're dealing with, because what we're looking at is the slow usurpation and taking over from within of this system by these elite interconnected families and these sociopaths and psychopaths, as we've pointed out. But to me, that implies that the further back in time we travel, the less control these people had over the system, implying that this system was set up in a truly free and unique way, which I guess to my mind brings up the idea that the idea for liberty that was manifested in the foundations of the United States was something genuinely threatening to the power structure of the monarchies and the feudal system that are pertained in the medieval system. So
wait,
obviously...
Wait, start that again, because I've lost...
So if you travel back several hundred years, obviously the dominant political system was feudalism, which was a very overt form of monarchical control over the direct control over the lives of the everyday peasants. And that was...
Might makes right.
Exactly, right. And that was overturned, starting with things like the Magna Carta, but the Renaissance and the Reformation started to really overturn that, and we found a new economic system with the rise of a middle class, and that was manifested in things like the French Revolution, but more importantly, I think, in the American Revolution. So that, I guess that was fundamentally a challenge to the power structure, and it seems to me that
But that's what I was saying about... that the Magna Carta was basically taking it from the king and crown royal family and their heirs or heir apparents and bringing it down a level to all the nobility, all the royals, all those who had money, land, and property, to where, like, look, you can't just grab our people, our family members, you can't imprison them, we have rights, and you can't just do anything to any of us anytime you please. And that took it down a level. Here in the United States, it took it down to the most base, most common level, to where it was all the people. And that's, you know, even with our forefathers or you know, my forefathers or whatever, and I would say that they weren't just, you know, those of Americans, but they had a bigger vision there, and that's why they had used tariffs and other tools to go after the royal families and their kingdoms, that they believed in something that was much bigger than themselves, and that they, although with all the imperfections that they were born into, the system that they were, slavery was there, they didn't create it, it was there as part of this colony, that the East Indies Corporation in England and the royal families had set up. You could say that it was included in the Constitution. When you really study it, it really wasn't. The three-fifths majority was not about making a black man, you know, we've talked about this, it wasn't about making a black man three-fifths of a person. It was because there was so many people, there was more people who did not have the direct right to vote for their representation, who were not educated, who at the time, of course, were not white, were not male, who didn't have a mule and 40 acres and whatever, to where there was orphans. There were children who weren't of age. They, whether male or female, they weren't of age. There were women, there were Indians, there were the indigenous people here on the continent, and many others, you know, illegal aliens, alien residents, and others who could not vote. There was more of them than actual people who could vote at the time. And rather than, I guess this was a little, short-sighted, rather than including and bringing women into the vote to level it so they didn't have to use a three-fifths majority, they came up with, for whatever reasons, because they were still a very, you know, misogynistic society, a male-dominated society. You know, it's only been the last 50, maybe 100 years that many other races and women have, and I'm not a white, I'm not Anglo-Saxon, I'm half Portuguese and half Irish, have been given the rights that were held by those who were, recognized by our system of law. But that system was set up to include and to allow more and more and more people to fight for their rights using the system to do it. And that system that was there to allow this has been cut off completely, to where there's a glass ceiling to where you cannot file a grievance and have it heard in a neutral, fair forum where the entire system has not been corrupted.
So it seems to me that the process of liberty taking a dominant place in society and taking a dominant place in the consciousness of the people has been a forward-looking movement that, unfortunately, we now see this rearguard action on the behalf of the royal families and the ruling oligarchy in terms of trying to reconsolidate their power. And I guess the question is this a pendulum that is swinging back and forth, or is this going in a definite direction?
And the laws of physics apply to human events as well. I believe that, you know, we are operating in a physical, you know, reality or system, and that for every reaction or for every action, there is an equal and opposing reaction. And I think that, and this is why they have the whole concept of terrorism, because they realize that this fight for independence from control of the royal families is going to become more and more a cellular, an individualistic battle, to where people are going to become, more and more people are going to stand up and start being counted. And when this happens, they know that if they do not have a system in place to carry out a program of poppy cropping, cutting off the tallest poppies, those who stick up and stand out and raise their head or speak out, or set their sights upon, you know, it goes back to the old days, like, you know, you couldn't even look at the king. You couldn't even fix your eyes on their eyes because you could have your head cut off for that. That is what these people want. And people really need to recognize that and push and fight and do everything they possibly can within, and I believe in the mindset of Gandhi and Martin Luther King and others, that if you go... And it may come to this. It's not anything I'm advocating for. And that's why the system is supposed to be there, for peaceful resolution of grievances, of complaints. And in my own system, the United States Merchant Marine, the federal contractors, the shipping companies, and the unions, who are paid to provide this industrial system of due process, first and foremost, so that the industry pays for, as a cost of doing business, the problems and correcting the problems that it causes first and foremost, and record any and all information about it to where it's not corrupted, like what's gone on with BP and the, you know, Gulf oil disaster, to where, you know, yeah, there's hearings and stuff, but, you know, getting at the truth, like even the 9/11 commission, I mean, they were, that whole system was corrupted from top to bottom. That board or panel or commission was not independent. And again, you find names like Hamilton, who was there with Keane on the 9/11 commission. Hamilton makes jet drives. They make all kinds of components for the military-industrial complex, and they get military and state federal contracts for jet drives on boats. Hamilton goes back to Alexander Hamilton, of course. And when you look at these names and these families, the only way that any of this is going to change is that people understand what fascism, corporatism is, that people understand that these people, Sarah Palin, John McCain, even John Kerry as well, you know, his marriage into the Heinz family and the ketchup and condiment, you know, dynasty, that gets enormous favoritism from the military and federal contracting, and buys Heinz ketchup. They even had in union contracts in the shipping industry with labor unions, and a bunch of these shipping companies, it was written into the contracts that the shipping companies had to buy Heinz ketchup. Think about what an advantage that is. Think about the influence that you can get by having an enormous contract that guarantees you a staple, you know, to not only survive, but to build your company off of. Geico. Geico stands for, it's the second largest insurance company, I think, or third here in the United States. It started from somebody stealing the address book for the military and using it to target military personnel. Geico stands for Government Employee Insurance Company. So they targeted government employees and military personnel, and they got a hold of a Rolodex from somebody working in the military and federal government and started sending out, hey, you need insurance, you want insurance, please buy insurance from us, from Geico.
Yes, well...
And or getting a contract from the federal government, much like what Ross Perot did with getting his company going. You get an initial contract to provide insurance to certain personnel in the federal government at discounted rates, like USAA, and the corporation and all the families connected to it are set not just for life, but on into perpetuity.
Absolutely. Well, the connections between corporation and government are numerous and often blatant. I don't know if you saw, but in Canada in 2003, I believe, when Paul Martin was taking over the prime ministership from Jean Chrétien, and he was the president of Canada Steamship Lines and owned the company's voting shares, and he was trying to maintain the fact that he could be both the president of CSL and the prime minister of Canada with no conflict of interest, but was eventually forced to transfer his voting shares to his sons.
Well, but still, it's still in the family.
Exactly.
Even
still
Arnold
in the family.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's running California into the ground as he's going out and shooting movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was just in The Expendables or whatever.
Absolutely. It's quite disgusting. That kind of thing can only happen in an uninformed public, though. That could not happen with an informed, concerned citizenry.
Well, but it's not just that, because they're using the military, just like Reagan did with the military air traffic controllers against PATCO. Look at what the Coast Guard is doing, where they're using the military to threaten civilians and make civilian law. That's not a normal system. That's not a healthy system. And the economy and the world is not going to turn around until they cure these things, these corruptions that are just there. It does not follow the last 1,500 years of worldwide case precedents coming from Europe, England, the Magna Carta, and more, and before, if not, you know, like I said, the Rubicon from 49 BC. You know, going back several thousand years to where we do not allow the military to get this involved, if at all, in civilian affairs. But that's exactly what's going on. And they're doing this because they're scared. They see what is coming. They're coming out with all these movies like 2012 and everything else, and they've turned the, you know, sci-fi channel not into something of creation and imagination. It's into the fear and, you know, terror channel. It's like Halloween every night.
Absolutely. Well, as we start thinking about wrapping up this conversation, let's start thinking about points of resistance and ways that people can get involved in an active manner that will hopefully not involve the collapse of society as we've known it.
Well, and that's what they want. They would, and I brought up the analogy of like Hamburger Hill or some of the movies like Platoon, where they have the military's, you know, military position or encampment is being overrun by the quote unquote enemy. You know, the inhabitants of the country that we've gone into, and you know, like Afghanistan or Iraq or Vietnam or Laos or Cambodia or Korea or any other country, and that the you know inhabitants are overrunning our encampments, and you know, much along like the Roman you know Empire and the encampments that it had throughout the world, that it's overrunning the encampments, and they call in a strike down upon their own heads, and they hunker down, bunker down, get in their trenches and cover, and you know, let the Air Force come in and knock out anything moving above ground, and then shake off the dirt, get up, and rebuild their encampment. That's exactly what they're doing, but in an economic, if not to the point, if they have to, in a military way, to where they are crushing their resistance. I mean, look what my whole situation started on a government vessel, the SS Comet, where I tried to stop an explosion before it happened, refused to light off the boiler because what they were doing was unsafe. I tried to stop dumping of hazardous materials on the same vessel, a government vessel, where the union's involved, the Maritime Administration is involved, the Military Sealift Command is involved, Naval Fleet Auxiliary Force is involved, the shipping company, American President Lines, inside the Bush administration, and even, you know, Canada through the family that started it, Stanley Dollar, who started up in Canada and came down here, much like, you know, Paul Martin had done with his shipping company, but instead coming down to the United States and using it to, you know, buy his way into the United States. Again, I'm getting lost on all these tangents or whatever. The point I was trying to make, help me here again.
I wish I could. I think yeah, I just got lost on that tangent too.
I'm trying to go back through all the different connections, yes. Not only with how I got involved in all this with the Comet, and I tried to file a grievance. Relay, they terminated me. I tried to stop an explosion before it happened. The chief engineer on board and the company terminated me, even though I did the right thing, to the point where I stood back and said, look, I'm not going to light off the boiler. What you're doing is unsafe. They had the junior officer carry out the light off. Sure enough, there was a flashback, an explosion, and he got burned. And rather than taking care of me and saying, you know, look, you know what you're doing, those in charge in the company went after me, promoted the guy that got burned who just did what he was told, didn't have the wherewithal or the training or education or experience to be, you know, strong enough in his position and say, look, I'm not doing this, period. And then also to stop dumping of hazardous materials where they dump the boilers into the harbor up in Alameda, the Coast Guard officer who this was reported to, Lieutenant Triboulet, has been rewarded, made a lieutenant commander in the Coast Guard, sent away to law school, sent away to JAG officer training school in the Coast Guard, and has pursued me for the last 8 years to where I've been forced into bigger corruptions other than, you know, just this. I should have still been working on the same vessel for the last, you know, 10 years because that happened in 2000. The Coast Guard has had me in this military tribunal carrying on a program of waste, fraud, abuse, gross mismanagement at the taxpayer's expense over what started as a fairly simple matter to where now it's gotten into where they're carrying on military tribunals of American civilians. It's insane. Instead of, you know, like they said, even with Nixon and Watergate, it's not the criminal act that necessarily gets you political criminal act. It's the cover-up that ends
That's
up being
right.
a lot worse
That's right.
than the original or initial act.
Trying to get the FBI to stop investigating Hunt, because that would lead to the whole Bay of Pigs thing, which we know is the JFK. It is,
right.
The entire system is insane. And unfortunately, in an insane system, they try to tell you you are insane if you act in a sane way. So
right.
that's exactly
well,
what's happening.
Well, but we are in control. That's what people really need to recognize. No matter what country you're in, it is, and even, you know, in a constitutional monarchy, or member state of the United Kingdom or European Union, you know, at some point the people need to understand they do have the power and that what is being carried out, because with technology where it's at today, if we allow the royal families to pull off what they are attempting, it's all over.
That is so key. Let's repeat that 10 times. You have the power. You have the power. You have the power. Okay, maybe not 10 times, but that is exactly the point, because all of these constitutions and all of this are just nice words on pieces of paper unless we act on that rhetoric.
Well,
because we just saw in Canada at the G20 in Toronto, we just saw the Canadian government literally throw the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms out the window and pretend, lie to the public to say that the police had the ability to do anything they wanted within 20 meters or 10 meters of the perimeter fence, when that was a lie. It had not ever been passed, and it was something that on the weekend, after the weekend of the G20, they admitted it was a lie, and nothing has happened and nothing is going to happen because the people are not outraged by such a disgusting and horrible act perpetrated by our own quote-unquote government. And unless people get angry and start taking the power back from these people who are trying to usurp that from the people, we are never going to solve anything.
Well, but like in our own Constitution, Declaration of Independence, it didn't say you the people, it said we the people. And it's not just you, it's we collectively. People have to work together and go after these. So you're like my own, I'm standing alone to a large extent against a branch of military that I'm not in, trying to be like the Dutch boy with the finger in the dike, holding back the you know, proverbial water or the military from flooding in and taking over completely civilian affairs and using this special self-proclaimed branch of military that's not in the Department of Defense but in Homeland Security to do so.
That's right. We do have to come together on these fundamental issues, or we will remain divided and we will fall. So if people are interested in getting in touch with you about your case or about the information you're providing, what's the best way for people to contact you?
Well, they can, of course, contact you. They can also contact me through Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. The information's on there, and talk to the network like Manny or somebody there. They can email me at LT, as in Lieutenant Shine, S-H-I-N-E, at SoCal, as in S-O-C-A-L, .rr.com. Or, you know, and they can get emails from you as well. I have another email upload in the zone at gmail.com. I don't give out too much, but, and make initial contact. I could really use help. I could really use legal aid. I could use a legal defense fund. I could use publicity. I mean, supposedly, the Coast Guard Commandant is coming out with the appeal in my matter shortly, and they've already said that this is, you know, a case of first impression. That means it's a precedent-setting case to where you have, all these things will be set in stone, if not challenged, beyond the Coast Guard and or NTSB, because the Coast Guard's now saying it's a branch of military. They've had a hold of me for 8 to 10 years or more falsely. They even said that I said that evil spirits possess me at times. I've never said that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, corruption that's going on, where they're willing to do stuff like that. You have to ask yourself, why? And how can one person stand alone against something like that? And you'd be surprised how one, two people, three people start stepping forward and standing, just like in the case of Compion and Ramos. They had their family behind them, and they did not get what they should have gotten, which was restoration and, you know, back to being Border Patrol agents, but they did get out of jail. So, you know, good things can happen, but it takes collective action of the people to stop injustice, to say, no, this is not going to happen in our name, and to stand strong against it, knowing full well that if they do it to one of us, just like in the issue of the anchor baby, if they do it to one of us who is defenseless, or even prisoners, if they mistreat our prisoners, God forbid, that means it's precedence to do it to the rest of the people.
Exactly. I agree completely. All right. Well, that's
a common law country.
There you go. That's a good point to end things on. We can take action and we can make a difference when we come together and help each other out in this. So I certainly hope
that. Well, we must. Exactly. We really must. It's coming to crossroads and, you know.
Divided we fall. So absolutely. We will. I hope there will be people out there who can step forward with support for you and what you're doing. But at any rate, we'll continue doing what we're doing, which includes not only these monthly conversations, but now every Saturday night on republicbroadcasting.org, 9 p.m. Pacific, 12 midnight Eastern. And I'm looking forward to talking with you again. I guess it'll be tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be tomorrow night. I look forward to it as well.